Hello, everyone. Well, thanks for coming tonight. Is this a good volume? Can everyone hear me? Vous pouvez m'entendre bien? C'est pas trop fort? Okay. My name is Jillian Nickham, and I am the new Acting Assistant Dean of Admissions and Recruitment in the Faculty of Law. I want to start off by recognizing that McGill sits on the traditional territory of the Gungi-Haga people, and the island now called Montreal has historically been a meeting place for other Indigenous nations, including the Algonquin people. Just going to go through a little bit of how things are going to, what we're going to cover today, and a couple housekeeping things. So first of all, you were all given, or should have been given, surveys and little, so a big green sheet or yellow and a pink little pink sheet. The surveys really help us keep track of who's coming to our sessions and how you found out about it to make sure that we are always improving what we do. So if you could please fill that out before you leave and give it to Kara, who probably gave it to you on your way in. The pink cards are for your questions, and the reason we do that is this session is webcast. You are not webcast, only the slides and the people at the podium are webcast, so that people who aren't able to make it to the session can watch it, or if you want to remember something that you missed later, it will be available on our website. So in order that all the questions are included in the webcast, we ask you to write them down on those little sheets of paper. Si vous n'avez pas reçu les questionnaires puis les petites feuilles roses, vous pouvez lever vos mains puis Cara va vous donner les feuilles. Il y a aussi des crayons sur le table en haut si vous avez besoin de ça aussi. The session is about 1.5 hours, and we will hope to get through the formal presentation part so that we leave quickly so we can leave enough time to have your questions, but also I want to make sure that I go through things in enough detail that it's useful. Ça va être une présentation bilingue, alors les fichiers, les diapos et les paroles vont être dans les deux langues. Je vais essayer de switcher entre les deux langues pour avoir une bonne mix de ça. Just want to start off by doing a quick poll of the room in terms of the kinds of, like where you're coming from. So are there CEGEP candidates in this room? Okay, good number. University candidates? Mature candidates? Okay. And is there anyone here who's from out of... Yes? Okay, so my next question was, is there anyone here who's actually here from out of town or who's come, you know, either come for this or been able to time their trip with this session? Great, well, that's awesome. Thanks for being here and for your interest in the program, and I hope I'm able to answer all your questions. So I've just sort of been through a bit of the introduction. We're going to have two student ambassadors come speak to you. They're students who help us in our recruitment activities throughout the year, and they'll speak about their experience with the admissions process and their experience in the program. And then I'm going to go through a little bit of information about the faculty and the program, and then admissions policies, the admissions process, supporting documents and deadlines, and then we'll have a Q&A where you can ask myself or the two student ambassadors or all three of us questions at the end. So without further ado, I will pass it to our two ambassadors, are Ori Powell and Natasha Petrov. Who are we? Okay, Natasha will come speak first.
Hi, bonjour, je m'appelle Natacha. Donc, je vais parler en français. Je m'appelle Natacha, je suis une étudiante du cégep, plus maintenant, mais je viens du cégep. J'allais au Collège Marie de France, donc c'est un cégep français. J'étais dans la filière économique et sociale. Donc voilà, donc je suis une applicante du cégep. Pourquoi est-ce que j'ai choisi McGill ? Donc je suis francophone, j'ai grandi dans une famille francophone, donc j'ai surtout, d'une part, choisi la faculté pour son bilinguisme et aussi, bien sûr, pour le programme transsystémique. Donc les deux traditions juridiques et aussi la façon dont les deux traditions sont enseignées. Donc c'est ça, pas seulement, on nous apprend pas seulement à être des avocats, mais à être des juristes. Donc comment réfléchir et penser au droit et un enseignement théorique autant que pratique. Donc pour le processus d'application, donc venant du cégep, c'est ça, il fallait soumettre un CV, une lettre de motivation, les notes ainsi que une entrevue, ce qui est différent des applicants universitaires. Et pour la vie étudiante à McGill et à la faculté, donc en tant qu'étudiant en droit, on passe beaucoup de temps dans la faculté puisqu'il y a énormément de ressources ici. Donc il y a beaucoup d'opportunités d'implication, beaucoup de ressources comme le Law Students Affairs Office. En fait, on retrouve tout dans la faculté. Il y a beaucoup de membres du personnel qui sont là pour nous soutenir et aussi beaucoup d'opportunités pour permettre un épanouissement personnel ou académique. Et depuis que je suis à McGill, l'environnement est très accueillant. Tout le monde, il y a beaucoup d'entraide, malgré les rumeurs sur le droit, que c'est très compétitif et les gens ne s'aident pas. Ici à McGill, c'est vraiment une ambiance très amicale, familiale. Puisque la faculté est relativement petite, c'est très facile de se faire des amis, puisqu'il n'y a pas énormément de gens. Et depuis que je suis à McGill, je me suis engagée dans le club de débat francophone de McGill. Donc, je suis un membre de l'exécutif sur ce comité-là, ainsi qu'avec une association qui s'appelle Innocence McGill, qui étudie des dossiers de gens qui ont été condamnés de façon injustifiée pour les aider à sortir de prison. Donc, c'est juste deux exemples d'engagement. Il y en a tellement dans la faculté. Et voilà, deux des engagements que je poursuis depuis que je suis ici, grâce à ce qu'elle offre. Voilà. Donc, si jamais vous avez des questions, ça me ferait plaisir d'y répondre.
Donc, la même chose, bonjour et bienvenue. Moi, je m'appelle Ori. Je vais faire le moitié en anglais aussi. So, my name is Ori. I'm a current 2L, so a second year law student here at the faculty. What we do as a student ambassador is essentially kind of portray our way that we got into law and also connect with the prospective applicants in the event you have any questions. So just a little bit of background on myself. I'm actually, I was born in Guatemala and grew up there for a few years and then moved to British Columbia before coming to Montreal. So my background prior to coming to law, I was actually in the aviation sector, working as in flight crew and a variety of different domains as well. That kind of led me back to university, so I did my undergraduate from Concordia University. I did a major in human relations and adult education, law and society as a minors. In terms of my current experience here at the McGill, I'm, like I said, 2L, so a second year law student. I'm currently full course load, so I take 6 courses while also doing a variety of different extracurricular activities. So I work currently here at the Legal Information Clinic. I provide case work and assistance to the community at large in Montreal community as well. So essentially we provide free legal information. So I'm going to plug them in as well in the event that you ever need information, come talk to the Legal Information Clinic. I also work for student advocacy. So that's for McGill students here at the general McGill body. So in the event that they need assistance and advocate work with the McGill policies. So amongst those two, I do my studies and I have a variety of other different extracurricular activities. All that to say is that it is busy here at the faculty, but it is also an opportunity to have fun. As you can see, we have coffee house as well coming here. So most of you entered that and saw that right now. So the life at McGill Law is essentially very attractive to some of the individuals that are considering law school. For me, my personal decision to come to the law faculty here at McGill was this approach of the transsystemic approach and having the two dual degrees. I won't go into too much detail about those particular items as we'll go through the presentation as well. But essentially for me, it was the McGill bilingual aspect, passively bilingual, so those individuals that are comfortable in those languages, we'll talk about that as well. And then the world-renowned profs that teach here, and also you have opportunity to learn from and study and also work with as well. The student body is also exceptional. We have we're very proud to have a vast array of diverse individuals, both backgrounds and academics. And these individuals, we kind of work really coherently together. As my colleague mentioned, it's not always what you think in terms of law school, where everybody's competitive and trying to, you know, get ahead of everyone else. We actually work really well together, and we help each other out because as a collective unit, we do better that way. So I'll just highlight some brief items to consider when you're doing your application process in general that I found was very useful as well. First, I'll just mention that to do it in advance, prepare in advance. A lot of you are here because you're trying to get the information, so it's really great. That's an kind of advantage amongst the other individuals that are going to do it last minute. But full disclosure, I did do mine last minute. It was only about a week prior to the deadline. I do not recommend doing it that way. But other than that, so I will also highlight in terms of the application, there's a variety of different law schools and each have their own little niche. So by going to the source directly, so coming here, talking to the faculty, looking online, it gives you a better description of what they're looking for. McGill is very proud to have the various different diverse backgrounds and academic backgrounds as well, and that's something that they strive for, as we'll touch upon in the presentation as well. I think rather than going on to each item that will be discussed, overall running theme that I was just trying to convey to you as well as you do your applications is to consider the purpose, you know, why you want to go to law school, but also the number one questions that we often get as a student ambassador, and I would say the faculty at large, is like, what is the best way to get into law school? And our response often is honestly to do something, select something that you like to begin with, because your chances are you'll do well at it, and that's going to convey in your application. So that would be my kind of highlighting tip for you to say that, and that goes for your studies, whatever you may be studying currently right now, but also extracurricular activities. You don't have to have a bunch, just do something that you really are passionate about, and that's going to be conveyed into your application and hopefully highlight the characteristics of your background for the admissions team. So we'll stick around as well for the other questions at the end.
Thank you, Ori and Natasha, for your insights and your experiences with the program and the application process. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the program to start and the faculty. So you heard a bit from Ori and Natasha about the trans-systemic program. So that program was implemented in 1999 and was recently renewed in 2016. And what it is it's teaching civil law and common law together in the same courses. Historically, was taught and still continues to be taught at most other law faculties as two separate streams. So you would take your civil law property course and your common law property course as two separate courses. And McGill actually in 2016, that's one of the renewals we did, was we created a trans-systemic property course. Before that, it was all the other basic courses that were taught trans-systemically, and property was seen as a really big project to undertake at one time. And so now it is taught trans-systemically in the second year of the program, including Indigenous law property perspectives in that trans-systemic approach as well. It was at the time and still is considered a unique way of teaching law and an innovative approach. And our faculty is really known for strong research, and McGill generally is known as a research institution, and the Faculty of Law is no exception. But because of this unique approach to teaching, there's also a consistent and strong focus on teaching and teaching methodology and renewing teaching approaches in the faculty. Because we're teaching civil law and common law together, it is also a bilingual program. I'm going to speak a little bit more about passive bilingualism and what that means later, but In all courses, whether you're taking your course in English or French, there are generally sources that will be in the other language. So if you're taking a class and your class, the language of instruction is English, you will have sources that are in French because a lot of civil law sources are in French. In 2016, there was a curriculum renewal. We added the Trans-Systemic Property Law course. We're working to always to incorporate more Indigenous legal traditions into the coursework and the experiential learning offerings. We also have now, it was a 13-week semester, and now we have a 12-week semester plus one. And the plus one in both semesters is an integration week in first year, or the upper year courses, they are focus weeks. And what the integration week is an opportunity for the whole first year class to do work together in the morning and then break off into smaller workshop groups in the afternoons for a whole week and work on a problem together as you kick off law school in the September term and then again in January. In upper years, the focus weeks are more practical or things that you wouldn't necessarily encounter in your normal coursework, things like financial literacy, community organizations, negotiation skills, and project management. And the idea is to give hands-on experience with some of the more practical aspects of practicing law and being a professional. When you graduate from McGill, you graduate with both a common law and a civil law degree, and though our degrees are recognized at all Canadian bars, so you can practice, you're admissible to all the bars in Canada, plus a number of American ones, namely New York and Massachusetts. And just so you know a little bit about the nomenclature, a lot of Canadian universities refer to a JD, which is also what a lot of American universities refer to. That is equivalent to an LLB. So just so you know that those are interchangeable. A lot of our graduates pursue non-traditional careers. They don't end up practicing law. It's about 75%, 25%. About three-quarters of our graduates end up in more traditional careers, and about 25% go on to non-traditional career options. The program is 105 credits. It is typically completed in 3.5 years, although it's possible to complete it in 3 years by taking heavier course loads in some semesters and some summer courses. Also, a lot of students opt to do it about a quarter of our students opt to do it in 4 years. And the benefit of that is having more time to complete your studies, but it also gives you more options to complete exchanges and other experiential learning opportunities. There are other options that you can add to your degree program. So none of these are obligatory. They're additional aspects of the program. So there's a majors stream, which is there are two of those. One is commercial negotiation and dispute resolution, and the other is international human rights and development. And opting for a major requires an additional 18 credits. And it also involves writing an essay and completing an internship in that area. Minors include an additional 18 credits, although some science minors need 24 credits. They can be done in arts, science, or management. And this is an option that might be appealing to CEGEP candidates who maybe had an interest in studying something else but decided to come to school, law school right away. And so this gives you an option to explore another area a little bit more detail. Then the honors program is an additional 15 credits and includes major research and a writing component. This you would apply for after 2 years of completed full-time studies in law and you've accomplished a 3.0 GPA in that time. So For all of these, you can decide later in the program. In fact, you have to decide later in the program. It's not something, it's not a decision you make on your application. Although if it's something that interests you and is part of your motivation for law, you can certainly indicate that in your application. There are also two joint programs. One is the joint MBA and law degree, and the other one is a joint Master's of Social Work and Law. For to be admitted to the joint programs, you have to apply to each faculty separately, so you have to meet the eligibility requirements for both. For Master's of Social Work, you have to do a qualifying year or have a Bachelor's of Social Work. For the MBA, it's their same entrance requirements plus an additional 1 year of employment experience. This is obviously something that's not available to SAGEP candidates. It's for university candidates who have the background to apply. So I'm not going to go through this in too much detail. If and when you're admitted, you'll get all the details about the coursework, but just to kind of give you an overview, in first year, you take 31 credits, and they are all mandatory, so you don't have any course choice in first year. Criminal justice is now in first year. It used to be in upper years as criminal law. So you see you're doing criminal justice, constitutional law, contractual obligations, foundations, extra-contractual obligations, and then the integration workshop, which starts off, as I mentioned, as an integration week, and it continues throughout the semester as a workshop. So you meet once a week with your smaller workshop group throughout the rest of the 12-week semester. There are required courses in upper years. There is a writing requirement. And we have complementary course baskets, so you're required to take a minimum of 3 credits from the set of classes, the baskets on the right side there, so civil law immersion courses, common law immersion, social diversity, human rights, and Indigenous law courses, and principles of Canadian administrative law. And then you also have room in your 105 credits to take some elective courses. They can be additional law credit courses, but you can do a maximum of 6 outside law credits, so taken at another university or at McGill, but in another faculty. And you can do a maximum of 21 credits during an exchange. We also have experiential learning and practical learning experiences. So those consist of clerkships, which I'll talk a little bit more, the legal clinic, which Ori mentioned, working at the McGill Law Journal on the editorial board or administratively, advanced mooting, becoming a group assistant or a legal methodology teaching assistant, or completing an internship. So, a little bit more detail about the experiential learning options. So, we have a really amazing international human rights internship program and community legal clinic placements. So, we have a number of community legal clinics that are set up already, but if there's a legal clinic that you'd like to work with that's not one of our established ones, you can apply to have that recognized, and that allows you to work in the community providing legal services, usually under the supervision of a lawyer, in exchange for credit. We have court clerkships at the Court of Appeal, the Cour supérieure du Québec, and the Cour de Québec, and the Tribunal de Jeunesse. You can also participate at the legal clinic, pro bono students, and LEX, which is actually a program that's overseen by the admissions office. And it is a high school outreach program. So we set up groups of law students to go visit high schools in and around the Montreal Island and outside to give them give students an idea of a legal education, post-secondary education, hopefully to inspire them and help them see themselves pursuing a legal education. And inside those are outside experiential learning courses, and then inside there's a lot of opportunity for skills and problem-based learning. The focus weeks are the upper year, 1 week periods of time where you do more work, more practical-based learning. There's a lot of collaborative workshops and innovative learning worked into a lot of the coursework. Advocacy is a new mandatory upper year course, which has a practical bent, and also legal ethics and professionalism is another mandatory upper year class. And outside of the classroom, there are lots of opportunities to be involved. There are lots of student groups and clubs, and they're quite active at the faculty, bringing in speakers, organizing events, organizing coffee houses, like the one that's happening tonight, representing the community. Some of them are done for fun. Sometimes the involvement is for fun. Sometimes the involvement is to make a difference in the community or to build something at the faculty. There is also room always to create your own club when you're here. So if you have an interest and there's no student club in existence for that interest, you can start one up and you can get official recognition from the LSA, and then suddenly you've created a community at the faculty, which is an exciting way to network and build something with people who have similar interests at the faculty. So we also have a career development office that will work with you from day one and give you a sense of the timelines that you need to be aware of as you go through the program and you're looking to either figure out what you want to do after law school, or if you know what you want to do, figure out, you know, help you strategize how to get there. They host events and we career days, networking events, one-on-one advising. We also host on-campus interviews, so where law firms come here and will interview you. They're actually not physically on campus this year, I understand, but they're in Montreal. So they really have their ear on the ground with alumni and the professional community at large. A lot of people ask what our grads do when they leave and where do they go. So we overall, the main places our grads end up is at law firms, working in government at policy level, in international organizations, and at universities. Directly out of the program, I think 90% end up at either in Montreal, Quebec City, Ottawa, Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, or Maritimes US and other international locations. That at 5 years out of the program, you start to see our grads dispersing a little bit, and only 70% end up in those locations after 5 years, and the other 30% are spread out a little more widely 5 years after graduation. So it kind of gives you a sense of the mobility of some of our grads as they move through their careers post-graduation. So here's a list of clerkships. The in-course clerkships are ones that you can do for credit as part of the program while you're here. The after-graduation ones just are it's a snapshot of the kind of opportunities and network that we're trying to build here for our students to be able to go on and have clerkships after. A nice fact about McGill that we're quite proud of is that a significant number of Supreme Court clerks end up coming from McGill. Over the last 5 years, 22% of Supreme Court clerks came from this faculty, and we feel that that is because of the trans-systemic approach. The Supreme Court is looking at cases that come from all over the country, and also the bilingualism, because they're hearing cases in both of Canada's official languages. So we're really proud of that, and we see that continuing into the future, and it's an exciting opportunity for our graduates. Okay, Je vais parler un peu de comment aborder la demande d'admission, un peu d'informations générales. Aurélie a parlé un peu de ça, mais juste pour élaborer un peu. C'est bon de faire les bonnes recherches à propos de notre faculté et les autres facultés dont ces questions ici sont bonnes pour vous. Nous avons nos forces, les autres facultés au Canada en droit ont leurs forces, et c'est bon de savoir, c'est bon de penser un peu, c'est où le bon fit pour vous. Alors, il faut te questionner un peu pour savoir qu'est-ce que vous cherchez et quelle faculté de droit sera le meilleur choix pour vous. Faire vos recherches, vous faites ça actuellement en être ici, mais pour les autres facultés même, regardez en ligne, regardez les détails de leur programme, que sont les offres, qu'est-ce qu'ils offrent aux étudiants puis aux gradués. C'est bon de collaborer avec le service des admissions. Alors, nous avons une équipe de 4 personnes, 5 incluant moi, qui est là pour répondre à vos questions. Alors, utilisez-nous. Nous avons beaucoup d'informations sur le site web aussi. Alors, si vous ne trouvez pas vos réponses, sentez libre de téléphoner, envoyer un courriel et on essaie de répondre à vos questions autant que possible. Vous avez notre contact là aussi. J'ai mis des informations sur la table là qui ont toutes nos informations, le numéro de téléphone, puis aussi notre courriel. Je vais parler un peu de la politique d'admission. Alors, notre objectif, c'est de sélectionner les étudiants qui sont vraiment les meilleurs pour l'étude de droit dans notre système, dans notre programme transsystémique et bilingue. Alors, on a un processus qui est un peu différent des autres facultés de droit. On s'appelle un processus d'évaluation holistique, or holistic evaluation process. Et qu'est-ce que ça veut dire? On a un comité d'admission qui est fait des profs de McGill et le doyen adjointe, le doyen aux admissions et recrutement. Et ils lisent, tous les membres du faculté, du comité lisent le total du dossier. Alors, on ne fait pas sélection seulement sur les notes universitaires ou de cégep. On lit tout le fichier au complet. Et qu'est-ce qu'ils cherchent? Ils cherchent que vous démontrez la curiosité intellectuelle, l'engagement communautaire, l'éveil, c'est-à-dire au niveau culturel, économique, politique, social et autres, la capacité de leadership, l'aptitude de travailler avec les autres, l'ouverture face à la diversité, la maturité, un sens d'éthique, le jugement et la faculté d'adaptation aux conditions tant positives que négatives. Alors, on cherche les perspectives diverses dans la faculté parce qu'on trouve que ça contribue à la richesse des conversations, des dialogues en classe, puis à la vie à la faculté aussi. C'est une diversité qui est au niveau géographique, puis surtout les backgrounds des gens qui viennent ici. Au niveau de bilinguisme, on cherche un bilinguisme passif. Alors, ça veut dire que vous êtes capable de comprendre et lire les deux langues du programme, alors anglais et le français. Je vais vous dire que c'est plutôt un défi pour nous au niveau de le français. Presque tous nos applicants pour le programme, on essaie d'anglais pour le programme. Et c'est pas le bilinguisme, c'est pas comme quelque chose qui est compétitif. Pour nous, c'est est-ce que le candidat
a le niveau de français ou d'anglais pour réussir dans le programme. Alors, si vous avez, c'est comme on coche une boîte et votre demande se procède. Sinon, la demande ne procède pas. Et je vais parler un peu plus tard de comment on détermine si vous avez assez de français en lisant votre demande. Mais ce qui est bon à savoir, c'est la raison que nous avons ce que c'est nécessaire, c'est qu'on a des matériaux et les conversations qui passent dans les deux langues, même si vous êtes dans un cours en anglais ou uniquement en français. Okay, I'm going to talk a bit about the overall competitiveness of the program. So for the 2017 entering class, we had 1,249 applications. We made 254 offers for 184 spots in the class. The average CGPA, or the average percentage of the entering class, was 84%. And the average LSAT was 162, which is in the 84.9 percentile. 23% of the entering class this year came from CEGEP, and 16% had a master's or a doctorate. It's PhD students coming into the program with a PhD, it's a lot lower. It's usually around 2-3 students per year. So the bulk of that 16% is students who have a master's degree. 38% of the class, excluding CEGEP students, wrote the LSAT, and the average age is 23. For CEGEP candidates only, we had 406 applications. We interviewed 92 candidates, offered 49 offers of admission, and the average coteur was 33.8, with the highest being 36.9 and the lowest being 31.9. All of these statistics vary from year to year, but they're in the range. So some years our score will be 30, the highest will be 37.2 and the lowest will be 30. It's rare that we'll see a CEGEP candidate come into the program with lower than a 29 coteur. We have a holistic review process, but I will never say never, but it's something that is very rare. And all CEGEP candidates that are potentially admissible are interviewed. So we don't admit any CEGEP candidates unless they're interviewed first. A lot of interviews are made that don't lead to an offer, as you can see from the numbers, but everyone given an offer is interviewed first. Okay, so admission requirements. So at the level of education, you're required to have your DEC or the Quebec French Baccalaureate, which would be from Marie-France or Stanislas. Or you could still be considered a CEGEP candidate if you have completed your DEC and you've done 1 year of university studies, but not more than that. Or at least 60 credits of university studies, which is the equivalent of 2 years. I should add that this is probably something that colors people's perspective of what makes you eligible, because this is really, it's extremely rare that someone will be admitted to the program with only 60 credits of undergraduate work. It's a competitive program, and the faculty really prefers to place emphasis on academic achievement at the level of admitting students, and often 60 credits is not really seen as competitive. I think it's happened once in the past 3 years, and usually you have to have a pretty good reason that you need to be admitted to law school sooner rather than later. So how do we assess your bilingualism? There's a few ways. The first way is in your application form, you indicate
how you learned French or English. So if you were raised in a bilingual household or you took French immersion from this year to this year, you indicate that in your application. This is a kind of a non-verifiable by our office, but it's part of your story. Another way we assess it is in your transcripts and your CV. So if you've taken courses in your university studies, French courses, let's just say, we'll see the level of the course. Was it a 2,000 level course or a 4,000 level course or 200, 400, depending how your university indicates that. Did you study at an English high school and a French cégep? This is a good way for us to assess that. We don't see your high school transcripts, but we know which high school you studied at. We also, if you take summer courses or any other continuing education where you learn French, you can indicate that as well. We also assess it in your CV. So if you had workplace experience in a French environment, that would show us your level of French on your CV. If we don't see any evidence of French at all, usually you will be unsuccessful based or English based on your linguistic capacities. If we see some, but we're not quite sure if it's enough, we will call you and conduct a little interview to test your French abilities on the phone. It's really to test your comprehension. You're not obligated to respond in French, or if it's an English test, in English. But it's to make sure that you understand the questions that are being asked. So, for your academic record, what you need to submit is every transcript that you have that is in your post-secondary education. So, your CEGEP transcripts, we only need your permanent code, and then we can access that. We access that directly. If you're a McGill student, we also access your transcripts directly. If you did an exchange program, we need your transcripts from the exchange. If you did summer courses, we need that. We need those. You do not need to submit official transcripts at the time of application, which can make things a lot easier for you for the entire system, really. But if you are sent an offer, you will need to submit your official transcripts after you've received your offer, because we need to verify the official transcripts before you begin the program. We don't have a preferred program for admission to law. So it's not like we're looking for political science candidates or economics candidates or business. Really, our candidates come from a wide range of academic backgrounds, and we like it that way. So don't think because you studied music or English or fine arts that you're less competitive. That we don't have any preference there. When the committee is looking through your files and your transcripts, they look at every single course you took and your progression as you move through the program. So they'll look at course averages if they're provided and see where your marks sit in the course and see whether or not there's a progression. Have you been challenging yourself in your program, or do you take a lot of 200 level courses when you're in fourth year? They're looking to see that there's consistency, improvement, and a difficulty in the range of coursework. So I just sort of put that out there because an 84 might not be a competitive, an 84% average might not be that competitive once you start to really look through the transcript. Whereas a 79 average could be competitive once you start to really look through it and see what the difficulty of the program and where you sit in the program and how much you challenged yourself as you went through it. I will talk a bit about the LSAT, why and when to write it. So it's not required for the program, and the reason for this is because it's not offered in French as of now, so we feel it would disadvantage Francophone applicants to the program. But if you are applying to any other law school outside of Quebec, you do need to write the LSAT, and when you do write the LSAT, it becomes part of your McGill file. We will see your results directly from LSAC. They will send us your results, but you need to tell us in your application that you're writing it, that you intend to write it, and when you're intending to write it. So the ideal latest time to write it for our process is the December deadline. You can write it at the for the February deadline, but that will keep your file sort of out of committee circulation until after we receive your results. So your file will not be circulated to committee until slightly later in the process. If you write it in December and you're really unhappy with your results and you really want to rewrite it, don't let what I just said stop you. Just know that there is a bit of a time lag consequence to waiting to write it in February. We ask for two letters of reference. The committee really prefers academic letters, it's good to try to find professors, if possible, that know you well, that can speak to your analytic ability, your intelligence, the quality of your interjections in class, the quality of your research and writing, not necessarily all these things. But we're really looking for someone who can speak to your academic abilities. Now, for some candidates, it's not possible to get two letters like that. Some, it's not even possible to get one letter like that. You do not have to submit academic letters. It's good if you can have at least one. You can also submit letters from employers or organizations you've volunteered for or community leaders. Stay away from personal references. And like I said, try to pinpoint a prof that knows you well, if you can, to write your letters. One thing, we do have instructions on our website about the format and content for our reference letters. And you might want to keep in mind that other law schools, not all law schools have the same guidelines about referee choice. So make sure you do your research for each law school in terms of what they're looking for your reference letters. And that sort of goes to the whole application as well. So another document you'll need to provide is the CV. Your CV, that's a two-page maximum. The committee will not read more than two pages, and always preferred that you follow the instructions, because the committee wonders why you didn't follow instructions if you submit a longer CV. It doesn't make your file inadmissible. It just won't be read, and it kind of looks bad. You want to try to tailor it as appropriate for an application to law. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a completely different looking CV. It will probably be very similar, but you might include certain community engagements that you might not otherwise put on your CV. Basically, we want to know what's been keeping you busy leading up to your application to law. You can highlight your achievements of academic and extracurricular nature. So if you've received academic awards, you can include those on your CV. If you have worked during your undergrad or high school or at any time on your path, it's good to include the number of hours you worked per week. It gives us a sense of how disciplined and hardworking you are, how much you can balance in your schedule. And also, you know, if you've been working a lot of hours and maintained pretty good grades, that gives a sense of how much you can you'll be able to handle academically. On the level of the personal statement, this is something we could probably talk about for quite a while, so I'm not going to get into it as in-depth as we could. You should write it in whichever language you feel most comfortable expressing yourself, English, limited to English and French. It should not be a summary of the CV or a cover letter of sorts. It really should be something that expresses why you want to study law, why you want to study at McGill,
and what you think you can bring to the faculty or what you think you will contribute to the faculty. This should really be, you should really try to do a deep dive and actually sit and think about it for a while before you write it and reflect on what your motivations are so that you're able to really convey those clearly and convincingly. The committee's looking for your something that sets you apart, something that makes you interesting, but they're also looking for your ability to write clearly and make an argument. So you want to make sure it's well written and well edited. Really, this is one of the, all of these sort of go to submitting or starting to work on your application as early as you can, but especially at the level of the personal statement, if you can have time to write it and then sit and come back to it later and review it later, that might help. You get some distance and decide whether or not it's convincing and compelling. Again, there are on our website some guidelines for format. It should not be more than 2 pages. So you have to think about what you're going to say in there as well. Sometimes you have to make choices to really focus in on answering the questions we're asking you to answer and creating a compelling case for yourself. The instructions for the personal statement are a little bit open-ended in terms of the substantively, we don't really give you much more guidance other than why law, why McGill, why you, and that's deliberate because the committee really wants to see what you do with the instruction, where you take that. So that sort of gives you a sense of what we're looking for in that regard. If you are invited for an interview. This is mostly applies to CEGEP candidates. The interview will take about 25 minutes. It'll be 2 interviewers from the Faculty of Law, usually committee members. It will be both in English and French. If it has to be by video conference, that's a possibility if you happen to be traveling when we invite you for an interview, but in person, if possible, is preferred. And the interviews are scheduled in February, and for CEGEP candidates, April and May. If we want to interview any university or mature candidates, we would do it earlier on in the process. That's not common, but we do have we do sort of reserve that the ability to do that if we feel we need to know more about a file. Okay, so just some nuts and bolts of the process. There is an online application. It is open now. It's been open since September 1st, and the deadline to submit your online application is November 1st. After you have submitted your application online and paid your fee, you will the next day be sent a login, and you'll be able to upload your supporting documents, which are all due on November 8th, including your reference letters. So you have... you upload all of your documents, so the personal statement, the CV, and your transcripts. Your referees, it's preferred that they email their reference letters directly to our office. And there is instructions on our site for guidelines for what we're looking for in the reference letter, but also instructions for your referees for how to email them to our office. So it's a document you can just send to your referees. We have to receive their reference letters by November 8th, so make sure that you give them lots of time to write them and that they're aware of the deadline and that they know they have to be submitted that day. They can be submitted by mail or in person, but really our preference is to have them by email. Our whole process is electronic now, so it really just creates more work for our office if they're sent by mail. So ask your referees to send them by email if possible, and if not, we'll accommodate a mailed letter, but it has to be received by the deadline. Try to make sure that your unofficial transcripts are legible. Sometimes the scans of paper transcripts aren't that great, and ensure that you upload you send us a valid email address, because if there's any problems with your documents before the deadline, that's how our office will contact you.
So it's your responsibility to make sure that your application is complete. And we are pretty strict about deadlines. We don't make exceptions if you miss a deadline. So you have to make sure that we get your documents on time. You can check Brinerva regularly to see what the status of your application is. You need to give 48 hours to allow the Minerva system to be updated, especially around the deadline. So that's another reason to start early, because you might be able to complete your entire application before the deadline, in which case you're going to have a lot more ability to call our office and ask questions and make sure everything is complete. If you wait until November 8th, our office is swamped, and it will take a lot longer to hear back from us if you have concerns about your file. So the earlier you start, kind of the less stress you have around deadline time. It's also good to have a backup plan for reference letters. If at the last minute it seems like one of your referees is not going to make the deadline, having a backup plan is it might be a good idea. If you switch out your referees, though, if you have different referees than what you listed on your application, you need to let our office know by email that you're changing your referees. Alors, les dates limites sont pour université mature et advanced standing, c'est le 1er novembre pour les demandes et le 8 pour les documents de support. Et pour les candidats cégepiens, c'est le 1er mars et le 7 mars. On voit là les frais de total pour 2017-2018, ça change un peu d'année par année, mais pas beaucoup. Pour les étudiants de Québec, c'est moins de 4 500 par année, moins de 10 000 pour les Canadiens. Et pour les étudiants internationaux, c'est juste en dessous de 40 000. So we have a timeline here of the process. We've sort of gone through some of the main ones. We went through the latest LSAT testing recommended. We start making offers in December, and we go through all the way till May. So our process is an ongoing process. It's not a rolling admissions process, which means that you can keep submitting. Our deadlines are firm, but we make offers because we have a committee process. Circulating all the files to committee takes some time, and we continue to make offers through until May. We have in February an information session for admitted candidates. So if you have received your offer before February, you're invited to the faculty to meet student ambassadors and have a tour and learn a little bit more about the program. I think that's really all we need to highlight at this time that we haven't already talked about. Okay, so I'm going to ask you if you have any questions and answers. If you've got little pink slips, you can pass them to Kara, and I will read your questions. One thing about the questions, I should have mentioned this before. Sorry, I forgot. We really want to keep questions to general admissions questions at this point. If you have questions that are specific to your case or specific to your file, it's probably better, you'll get a better answer if you call or email the admissions office, because we want to really keep this at the level of information that's going to be helpful to everyone generally. So if you have a question and you don't have a pink slip, you can raise your hand and I will repeat your question. So if we get to that point. Can you write it down? Yeah, and then Kara will collect it and then we'll read them. So as Kara collects them, I'll start answering them just so that we I want to try and get to as many questions as I can. So my first question is, how does the February LSAT impact my candidacy? And we talked about that a little bit. The impact is it will delay your circulation of your file till later in the process. So by February, we've already made a number of offers. It means that there are less spaces in the class when your file starts being circulated to committee. So it slows down your file being circulated. But if you do well on the LSAT and you have a strong file, it should not impact your candidacy. If you do write the LSAT more than once, we take an average of the two grades. A lot of faculties take the higher of the two grades, but we actually take an average of it. So if you're worried that your grade is your score is not high enough, but you need to think about whether or not it's going to help you overall to write it again. But yeah, the February, it's not our preference to keep your files held that long in the process, but if it's a good file, it won't impact it. Thank you. Are admissions possible for the winter semester? No, our class enters in September, and it doesn't start partway through the year for entering students. Is it better to have pursued an undergrad before applying to law school? The answer to that is it depends. I think we hear from CEGEP candidates who were refused as CEGEP candidates, and then students who are in our faculty now who then later applied as a university candidate, and they almost always say that they're glad that even though they were very disappointed to be refused their first time, they're very glad that it ended up happening that way because they really value the education that they got in their undergraduate degree. The maturity and the additional perspectives can help add to your experience here. That said, we have lots of really high-quality CEGEP students here who come directly from CEGEP, and they contribute a lot to the faculty. By the way, if you guys want to come answer especially these kinds of questions that have to do with student life, feel free to just come on up. Clerkships. Do most people going on to do a Supreme Court clerkship do a clerkship during their degree? I don't think that that's necessarily a correlation. I don't have statistics on that, but I think the thing for a Supreme Court clerkship is they're really looking for high academic performance and good reference letters. So, and they also have a rigorous interview process. Does foregoing the LSAT create any limitations for a legal career? I think your legal career, your options as a professional are really based more on your work in law school. The LSAT gets you into law school. It's not a big part, if a part at all, of your professional applications. I'm not aware of law schools that ask for LSAT. Law firms that ask for LSAT grades in the recruitment process. So, someone else might have a different anecdote, but I've never heard of that. The bar is in French at the Quebec bar. Does the fact that certain courses are taken in English disadvantage students? So, no. In fact, I think we had, I don't know if it was last year, the top graduate of the bar, the Quebec bar, was a McGill student recently. Certainly, the bar really focuses on the letter of the law, and it is all in French. But you can write your exams in English. You can take your exams in English. I have written the Quebec bar, and I don't think that having studied in English affected my performance there at all.
McGill students are very well prepared to take the bar, and I think that's a consistent, the Quebec bar, and that's a consistent story. And it's, even though other faculties are focusing exclusively on the civil law and it is all in French, our students are really well prepared to sort of face that academic challenge when they graduate. Do you have some you want to answer?
We've got quite a few of them that are requesting information on the specifics that we provided in terms of the slides. And just to highlight again that this information is also going to be available online. So if you miss something like on the PowerPoint, you're more than welcome to go back and like take a look at it. All the information, a lot of the questions we're getting in terms of language requirements and stuff that we've talked about, you can also find the information on our application site directly from the law faculty. One of them here that kind of goes to the student life and in terms of after the first year, which is your mandatory courses, what kinds of courses can you take? This individual wants to know more about commercial law and criminal law. In the second year, you do have some pre-required courses, but you also have more flexibility to take courses that are of interest for you. And the same goes for your last years as well. The more, the higher you get up into the program, the more opportunity you have for interest.
For international applicants, what is the deadline? It's the same deadline as for everyone else. As a graduate of high school in Europe, do you need an international or a European baccalaureate? No, you need the only baccalaureates that are accepted are Quebec French baccalaureate programs. What you would need as an international student is either a Quebec French baccalaureate or a university bachelor's degree. Do you need to take an SAT or ACT as an international applicant? And the answer is no, although you do need to take the LSAT if you're applying to other schools that require it, and you can also opt to take it for admission to our program if you think it will improve your application. Does the admission committee take into account the fall semester, this semester? So when you are applying, you obviously don't have your transcripts, but you can send them in to update your file when you get them. So if you do really well this semester, you can send in your transcripts as soon as you get them. If your file's been circulated to committee already, it won't be reread by committee who's already read your file, because that would just slow our process down too much. But any subsequent readers of the file will see your new transcripts. Why would non-CEGEP students be called to an interview? How many are called to an interview usually? Usually very few, and the reason is we see something we like in the file, but we feel we need to know a little bit more. So we opt to invite the candidate in for an interview because we want to make sure that we get all of our questions answered. What kind of law does McGill specialize in? Well, this is a good question. The undergraduate program is like all law programs generally at the undergraduate level are considered like a generalized degree. So there's no specialty at the level of undergraduate studies, although a lot of students, you can sort of direct your studies, your courses, your extracurriculars, your research assistant work you do outside of the classroom. You can direct what you do to a certain specialization so that you can get more exposure to it. Usually specialization takes place either at the graduate level or in the workplace, so at a practical level. At the level of research, McGill has a really wide breadth of faculty members doing a really wide array of research. I would probably do a disservice to try and summarize it right now, but there is a tab on the McGill Law website that is called Research, and it will tell you what our faculty is up to at that level. Okay. Est-ce qu'il est préférable pour un appliquant francophone d'écrire une lettre de présentation en anglais afin de démontrer un bon niveau d'écriture dans notre deuxième langue? Ça, c'est vraiment à vous de décider. Ce que nous suggérons d'habitude, c'est choisir la langue pour ton présentation personnelle dont vous écrivez le mieux, que vous sentez plus à l'aise de vous exprimer, parce que c'est ça qu'on veut vraiment nous assurer. C'est mieux que la présentation personnelle soit bien écrite, que ça démontre votre niveau de capacité dans la deuxième langue.
What exactly is the LSAT and how do you prepare for it? That's another good question. It's a standardized law school entrance exam, and it is, it's difficult to summarize. It's a logic, reading comprehension, testing analytical skills. So there are a number of organizations that offer training for how to prepare for the test. Kaplan is one. I'm sure there's others. Anyone? You can also buy sample test books at the bookstore and test how well you do on them. There are actual former tests, so you can practice the exam and see how you do and then decide if you need more official training or if you're just going to teach yourself on your own. It's a whole thing into itself, and the organization that puts the test together and conducts the testing is called LSAC, Law School Admissions Council. It's an American organization, and if you look that up or look up LSAT, you'll find lots of information. Are stage-up students less likely to get in the program because their admissions are later and spots are already taken? No, we have no quotas for any category of applicants. It's not like we have, you know, we have only 20 spots for stage-up candidates and 120 for university. We don't work like that. We do have numbers that are consistent over time, but we know the stage-up candidates are coming in March, and the class has room in March for stage-up candidates. We don't fill the class up by then, so it doesn't disadvantage stage-up candidates to be in March. We know that they're coming. Would you recommend stage-up students that feel their R score doesn't represent their ability to do the LSAT? I don't see that very often, so I can't really say how the committee would judge that, whether it would improve an assessment of your file or not. Because it's a committee process, yeah, there's no real policy on that. If you are writing the LSAT sample tests and you're scoring really high, it could help your file. But if you're writing the practice tests and you're scoring low, it might not help your file. So if you're curious about that, I would say look into it a little bit better, a little bit further, and see how you're scoring on them. A good LSAT score raises the competitiveness of the file, and a bad one kind of lowers the competitiveness of the file. So just keep that in mind. Why are university students not interviewed like SAGEP students? Partially it's a matter of resources. We can't interview everybody, or we would never finish the admissions process by September. But we do interview university students when we feel like we need to know a little bit more. I think the policy of interviewing all SAGEP candidates before they're given an offer is to make sure that there's a level of maturity and analytical and critical thinking skills needed to succeed in the program. And with students who have completed a bachelor's degree, I suppose there's more of an assumption that those skills will be there. So, do the academics letters need to be in English or can they be in French? They can be in either English or French. What is the minimal R score accepted for the program? We don't have any maximums or minimums. We do have our averages through time, and on average, the lowest score tends to be in the 30 to 32 range. Below that is possible, but it's rare. How many volunteering hours are recommended or required? Again, there's no requirement there. What we're looking for in your CV is discipline, balance, taking on challenges. So you need to convey that in some way. Does the CEGEP we attend have any impact on or changes of admission? No, the CEGEP is not something that we... The CEGEP you look at, obviously, is something we will know about. We know that certain CEGEPs have more rigorous programs than others, but it doesn't disadvantage you to come from one over another. What level of French is required? What part of the program is in French? So we kind of talked about that. You need to be able to read and understand French, and you will have readings in both languages, and you will have, you could have exam passages in French, even if you're in an English course. And just to be part of the life at the faculty, you need to be able to understand both French and English, because your colleagues will interject in class in the language they feel like interjecting in. And if you miss the question, and the prof will probably answer in French, or he or she will answer in the language that the question was asked more often than not. So if you miss the answer, you're kind of missing out on part of what's happening around you. Is the information from the slides available on the website? Yes, there is. This session will be webcast. It will be up probably in a few days, late next week. But there are webcasts from previous years, and the information changes minimally year to year. So if you're antsy and you want to see something right away, you can go on and see past years. OK. Pour les candidats cégepiens, est-il utile pour le comité de mentionner les activités parascolaires et les bénévolats effectués durant les années au secondaire? Oui, si vous croyez que c'est relevant à votre demande, oui, vous pouvez indiquer ça. Dans le cas d'un double DEC au cégep, le comité prend-il le quota global ou le meilleur entre les deux programmes? Moi, je sais pas. Global, oui, OK. Alors, c'est un quota global dans ce cas. Il y a d'autres? Is there a choice of exams or mooting in both languages? Are we forced to do either, or is it compulsory? You can choose to do your work, your mooting, your exams. Your exams will be in the language that the class is taken, with the exception of excerpts. But if you take a French extra-contractual obligations course, your exam will be in French, but you can write your exam in English. So you're always in your output. You always have the choice of what language you're going to use. So what is the difference between the November 1st and November 8th deadline? The November 1st deadline is for your application and to pay the fees, and the November 8th deadline is to provide your supporting documents. And another question here is, can transcripts be official? And yes, they can. It's just that unofficial transcripts tend to be easier for people to get, so we have that option there for you too. McGill est listé sur le site du Law School Admissions Council. Est-il possible de procurer des lettres de recommandation sur cette plateforme? Je pense pas que je comprends pas la question. Est-ce que la personne qui a demandé ça est confortable de me clarifier? Si vous êtes encore ici? Alors, est-ce qu'il est possible de soumettre les lettres de recommandation? Non. On veut que les lettres de recommandation et les transcripts soient envoyés, vous téléchargez, téléchargez vos transcripts sur Minerva et les référés envoient par courriel leurs lettres de référence. Le Law School Admission Council va nous envoyer vos résultats de LSAT directement. Alors ça, c'est la seule chose qu'ils nous envoient. Nous sommes listés là parce qu'ils nous envoyaient les résultats, mais les autres documents d'appui ne vont pas à nous de ce site-là. Quel impact a un premier refus sur une seconde application peut-on être accepté après avoir été refusé l'année d'avant? Oui, certainement. On a beaucoup de gens dans la classe qui ont été refusés la première fois et ont réussi le deuxième, troisième, peut-être sur leur quatrième fois. On a un étudiant, ambassadeur étudiant qui a été accepté sur sa quatrième demande. Si vous aimeriez avoir un peu plus d'informations sur le repostulant, on a aussi une session d'information sur à ce sujet-là qui est vraiment pointue sur ces candidats. Mais la session est déjà passée, mais il y a un webcast aussi de cette session en ligne. Alors, vous pouvez écouter cette webcast pour avoir plus d'informations là. If you already study at McGill, do you need to send your transcript? No, we get it directly from McGill. Do you look at our grades from the fall semester? We answered that one. I heard people getting in after August. Is this the deadline for the offers? So we do put people on the wait list, and people can get offers as late as August. Sometimes people get offers in September on the first day of classes. If somebody doesn't show up for in-person registration, which is mandatory, we will find out if they're coming to the program. Sometimes it happens where we'll have one spot suddenly on the first day of classes. So it's conceivable to get an offer as late as September. We really try to avoid that, but it is possible. So we will have people on the wait list that late in the cycle. Two more. For CEGEP, can we use a high school teacher as a reference? You could, but it would be better to have CEGEP profs be your reference, your referees. So if you are a CEGEP candidate, you've got time right now, especially to develop relationships with your profs. You can go see them during office hours. You can talk to them. Tell them you're interested in law school. The better they know you, the better they're going to be able to write you a good letter. And maybe they'll be able to give you tips about what they need to see from you in order to be able to get a good letter from them. So start to work on those relationships now. For university candidates, you have a little bit less time to do that. But CEGEP candidates, you have got time for that. Okay, for students who have an undergraduate in a language other than English or French, how do we send a transcript with a translation if the envelope has to be sealed? So when you're applying, the envelope doesn't have to be sealed because it's an unofficial transcript. And when you apply, you do have to provide a translated version either from the university directly or from an official translator. You can find out more information about what the requirements are there on our website. For the official transcript, I'm not sure what the translation requirements are at that point in the process, so call back our office, and Kara or Kelly in our office will be able to give you a precise answer on that, because I'm off the top of my head, don't know. Does law count as one of the two program choices we make through a regular application? Yes. Yeah, so if you're applying to McGill and you're choosing programs, you choose one, law can be one of your choices. Okay. Any other? Okay. The second one? What is the earliest we find out if application submitted before November? So we start making offers in December. That's really for the really strong academic files. We'll start to make offers in December, and then the process continues through. Most decisions are made by April, by the end of April. But like I said, there will be people on the wait list beyond that point.
En moyenne, combien de personnes sur la liste d'attente sont acceptées à chaque année?
Oh, ça, c'est une bonne question. It varies. I would say, like, anywhere between
5 and 20?
20
psi. Okay. Entre, I'd say between 5 and 10 more would be closer. Yeah. Okay. Well, merci d'être venu. Comme j'ai dit, il y a des webcasts, alors vous pouvez faire les suivis. Il y a beaucoup d'informations sur notre site web. Vous pouvez contacter le bureau d'admission. Merci à nos ambassadeurs étudiants et merci à vous d'être venu. N'oubliez pas de donner à Cara vos questionnaires en sortant de la salle. Et merci beaucoup.